to go with the pirates because, of course, they have cannons and everything.
It's a pirate's life for me.
Be proud of who you are and what you are. You're a pirate.
It is a first down. Pirates.
Because when you're at East Carolina, you go for it every time. Or you don't coach at East Carolina, you don't come to East Carolina, you don't play at East Carolina with a weak heart. Write it.
I don't think I've ever been in a building as loud as that was. It was deafening in there.
You better get them on. I can promise you that.
Painted purple all night long in Eastern North Carolina.
You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
It was an unbelievable atmosphere. I've coached a long time in a lot of great places, and I don't think I've ever been in a building as loud as that was. There were some times where it was deafening in there.
This is East Carolina Hall of Famer and Utah Jazz first-round draft pick Blue Edwards. You're listening to Pirate Basketball Overtime on the Sports Objective, your home for the best East Carolina hoops coverage.
Welcome in to Pirate Basketball Overtime here on the Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates, and your home for the best ECU hoops coverage. Pirates go to Wichita on Wednesday night, pick up a much-needed win, 54-52 over the Wichita State Shockers. And right now, joining Matt Semenza and I is the play-by-play voice on the radio side of things, and that is, of course, Darren Vault. Darren, welcome into the show.
Thank you guys for having me, Bubba. Pleasure as always. Matt, good to know we're both maybe a little bit jet lagged for this conversation. So, Bubba, I trust that Bubba's going to put us on his back.
Yeah, I'm ready to carry the load. And, you know, as you take a look at things, Darren, or first of all, we've obviously had you on the show multiple times in the past, but I believe this is the first time since you've been the voice of the Basketball Pirates. And so, you and Michael Perry have done an excellent job this season. Of course, you know, a lot of times I'm watching ESPN Plus, but you know, anytime in the car, check out the radio side of things as well. But, first of all, how was that weather in Wichita? I know we were discussing it a little off the air.
You know, so it was my first time in the state of Kansas. Obviously, Kansas is Kansas and has a reputation of being Kansas, so you'd heard some things before going. Man, it was dreary. The visibility was not great, even for the charter, as we landed in Wichita. And it was just this constant fog sort of set over the city the whole time we were there. It did not do Kansas any favors in improving my preconceived notions about it, right? And some of the guys who had been there last year with the team had said that, you know, even clear skies, sun shining, it still just like doesn't have a lot of color, it seems. It's almost like, you know, you step off the plane and it's like Pleasantville, all of a sudden the world's black and white. But, you know, otherwise pleasant. The few people that I did encounter in Wichita were lovely. So I'm sure it's a fine place to live. But, you know, sometimes on those short turnaround trips, you make it a point to go sort of like walk around and experience more of the town. The weather played a part, but, you know, it just wasn't a factor for this time around. Like Philadelphia was way more my speed when we went up the Temple, right? I just feed off of that energy a little bit better, I guess.
Darren, it sounds a little bit like a microcosm of the game we watched last night, right? I mean, just kind of you talk about it's kind of just a low scoring, gritty, grinded out game. Not many fireworks offensively on either side, but
tractor pull.
Interesting game to say the least last night, huh?
Yeah, and well, I think it was that way from the very beginning when we got to going, and at the first media timeout, Coach Perry and I looked at each other, and we were just kind of making sure. We were like, Wichita turned it over on all five of their first five possessions, right? And it was, you know what I mean? It's just like, I don't know that I've ever seen that. At first media timeout, there were, what, eight combined turnovers between the two teams. And, you know, Coach Perry's seen a lot of basketball. I asked him at that point, I was like, have you ever seen twice as many turnovers as total points at the first media timeout? Just a weird, clunky game. And, you know, I guess we've had our share of them with the Pirates this year. And at some point you kind of become what the numbers say you are. This is a team that we know is capable of scoring in some bunches and is capable of hitting shots with some pretty high frequency. It just hasn't been the case more often than not with them. But, you know, I will say this, they held Wichita State to 52 points. It's a team that came into last night averaging over 74 per game. So, you know, say what you want about shooting a much worse percentage, taking 24 more shots than the Shockers from the field and still only escaping by two. There's something to be said for the defensive mentality of Mike Schwartz and his coaching staff, right? Like that half of the game is working and it's working pretty flawlessly.
Yeah. And that's something, you know, a lot of folks, you know, wanted to dwell on, you know, this isn't the best of Wichita State teams, and that's true. But to your point and what you said, 74 points going into last night, and I think that was the first time all year that they had been held below 60, and just I think the third time that they had been held below 66. So it was, you know, not the best of performances on their part, but East Carolina had a lot to do with that.
Yeah, and we talked a lot last night too about the beginnings of the conference schedule for Wichita State in addition to the non-conference. I mean, look, they had you know, games against Richmond, which is the number two team in the A-10 right now, a great basketball conference, on their non-con schedule. They had Kansas and Kansas State on there, and then, you know, two of their first three or four conference games happened to be back-to-back Memphis and at FAU, which are, you know, I think we all can agree that the two and then everybody else in this conference, even regardless of what the standings say, those are the two most talented teams in the conference. And they played USF pretty close, a team that we're going to see in a couple of games that is up there in the standings for the conference. So, you know, they're still over in the conference standings. But again, they were, 45 spots ahead of the Pirates going into last night in the net rankings. Despite that, like, you know, it's a team that has played a tough schedule. They're better than their record. Like, I know people think that's cliche and they don't like hearing that. Like, that is a Wichita team that's just so far and away better than their record, now 0-6 in conference play. It's a good win. It's a road win at a place where there's a lot of basketball history. Not their best crowd, I would say, for the Shockers last night, but it was still a loud environment and one that presumably it was tough to play in. I don't know. I wasn't playing, but I assume you had to overcome some things to do what the Pirates did. So a win is a win. We'll take it. That's number two on the road this season in a couple of you know, kind of historic environments at Temple and at Wichita State. So it's tough to complain about those.
Yeah, Coke Arena, I believe the Shockers were only trailing Memphis in attendance, obviously, in FedEx Forum. And Tigers always draw well, as do the Shockers. And no, I think 5,300 is something around that is what I saw for last night's figure. But that's something that me and other Pirates were talking about going into last night, just with them being 0-5, knowing that they were better than that record. Both teams really in desperate need of a win to, you know, going into or nearing the midway point of the conference schedule. and that was one that was going to be tough to get, and it wasn't necessarily pretty, but we found a way to get it done.
Yeah, at that point, like you said, Bubba, the Pirates just needed a win, right? And you can take the good with the bad of it. Not a great shooting night for much of anybody on the team, but the bright spots of some guys contributing who hadn't otherwise contributed much in certain performances so far this year. I joke with Coach Perry. Are you guys familiar with the Tony Snell meme where it shows his graphics and it's like Tony Snell, NBA player, 29 minutes, 0 points, 0 rebounds, 0 assists, 0 steals, 0. It's like, you know, all these minutes accumulated and he's got no stats, right? It's the sort of thing that Mike Schwartz. It's the sort of thing that Mike Schwartz has challenged certain players to avoid this season. And we got that, right? And it wasn't a ton on the stat sheet for Val Pinedo, for instance. But, man, if you were watching that game, you know some of the plays he made had a huge impact in a one-score game. At one point, you know, he's boxing out 6'11", 260-pound Quincy Ballard, who has been around the block, a transfer from Florida State, the guy that had 7 blocks. There it is. Yeah, 28 minutes.
There you go. I had to look it up right quick.
Wow. That's almost hard to do, fellas. I mean,
yeah,
28 minutes without recording a single stat. I mean, that's a challenge right there.
So,
but productive.
Yeah, so like the Pirates had some stat lines that looked like that, right? And Coach Perry and I had joked about it. And, you know, as much as you can joke about that sort of thing. But Val was one of those guys, right, where early in the season he would play a bunch of minutes and the stats would say, you know, 0-0-0-0-0-0-0. And granted, he's not going to score in bucket loads. That's not his thing. But last night, man, he really came through in some big spots when Ezra was knocked up and out of the game for an extended period of time. And, you know, Sierra Malonga comes in, plays really good minutes. I know people have been clamoring for him to get more minutes because it seems like every time he gets a handful, he's productive in those. But, man, he was great in his spots. I thought Cal Richard did a great job in his limited time, 6 or 7 minutes on the floor, especially to have not really been involved for that, you know, week or two stretch a bit earlier in the season. So, you take the good with the bad. Certain things are rounding out into form. I know it's not as quickly as we all wanted it to happen, but the truth of the matter is that there have been little naggy things that have agitated this basketball team up to this point. And I'll lump Cam Hayes not being available for the first stretch of the season into that, right? And granted, you recruit him and you bring him in, not sure if he's going to be able to play this year. So he's not necessarily a recruit that is here for this year. But now that he's eligible to play, you have to factor him in, and that's going to come with a learning curve right in the middle of your season. So it's not happened as quickly as we all want it to. It's still obviously a work in progress, but it's getting there. And I get people's concerns with the high expectations and then what it's become, but you know, this is a team that can still pull off some big wins in what's left of the schedule. And like, who's to say that they don't get hot and finish 500 or maybe a little bit better in conference play? I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
Speaking of little naggy things, this is something you and I were discussing off the air. Matt and I discussed it earlier today, and that is in the point guard position. Bobby Pettiford certainly had his moments this year, but of late he had struggled. So Jaden Walker got the start. Jaden had played 25 to 30 minutes, 2 or 3 games in a row, and had some pretty nice production. So Jaden got the start last night, and Jaden, I think, played 25 minutes last night. Bobby played 19. In those 19 minutes off the bench, Bobby had 8 points and 5 rebounds. I know you talked about, I believe, that and some of the lineup decisions with Coach Schwartz post-game. What were your thoughts on that, and what did Coach Schwartz had to say?
Yeah, I don't know that it was a major surprise when we saw the starting lineup and Jaden Walker and Sir Malongo were both in there. Truthfully, especially when he started being able to play games and struggled from the field, Cam Hayes is a guy that I kind of thought from the jump it would be a nice bench piece. Not to diminish his skill as a player. He's the type of guy who could be in a starting five, and I think we'll see him there to continue for much of the rest of the season. But when he was struggling to get going, I think being in the starting lineup, he was putting some pressure on himself. So like that's something that Coach Perry and I had talked about. You know, maybe you move him to where he's one of the first off the bench, and it takes a little bit of pressure off of him and maybe it can loosen him up and get him going offensively. Now, of course, you know, he's the Pirates' best 3-point shooter in conference play. So, you know, Jaden has played well as of late. He had the nagging hamstring injury that has sort of kept him from playing prolonged minutes early in the season. And Bobby had been in just like a little bit of a rut, right? And part of it too, guys, I think Coach Schwartz, after the UAB loss, pointed to a season high 16 turnovers. A lot of those were backcourt players committing those turnovers. And, you know, three of those were Bobby Pettiford. It's just the second time all year he's turned it over three times. And considering his usage rate and how often he is handling the basketball, it's pretty phenomenal that that's been the case. But you know, the size was a factor, getting Jaden in to size up with Wichita State, which was entering last night, and I guess still is the case, a pretty good offensive rebounding team. And they still had seven, I believe, last night, something like that. And so the size was a concern, but also just the way Jaden had played. And we had Bobby on as our post-game interview from a player standpoint last night. It was funny. The scoring was so spread out. We didn't really have an obvious player of the game. So I asked Coach Perry, I was like, well, who do you want to talk to? Who do you think was important? And he immediately was like, Bobby. I want to talk to Bobby, because he was in awe of some of those offensive rebounds. You know, Bobby, the smallest dude on the floor, going up amongst the trees, including Quincy Ballard, who I mentioned, who's 6'11", and out rebounding guys in moments where we needed it. So it was good to hear to hear Bob talk about Jaden getting the start. And he mentioned that the two of them are very close. There's no animosity about who gets the starting spot or whatever. It was just sort of an understood thing when they found out that Jaden was going to start. Bobby's like, okay, cool. I had my turn. Now it's your turn. At some point it might be my turn again, but like, let's go. Let's make the best of it. So it was really interesting to see the team's reaction to that. Like, encouraging, I think, is the other word that I would use for it, because, you know, Sear getting in to the starting lineup, producing in the minutes that he played in the way that he did, and then sort of being in that platoon rotation with Cal Richard, at least to start the game, and then they sort of went back into more of a conventional rotation and lineup that wasn't quite as big for certain moments. It was great to get those guys in and get them playing meaningful minutes, right? Because like Coach Schwartz has talked about it all season, how, you know, the depth is not where he wants it to be. He thinks it can be. And like, you got to find situations for those guys to get out there and produce in order to build that depth. And, you know, I mentioned Val Pinedo. He's certainly a piece of that too. I don't know what his minutes are going to look like moving forward, because last night was more of a necessity, but it's certainly nice to know that you've got a guy who can hold his own if you need to in those minutes. Right. So yeah, it was a positive sign. And I'll say this lastly about the rotations and the starting lineup. Coach Schwartz told us in the postgame, it was a little bit less about the opponent and more about where he sees the direction of this team going, which I thought was interesting. And it will be interesting to see what the starting five turns out to be when we get there on Sunday, and you know, maybe it's Sear and Jaden in the starting lineup again, right? Like, if it's working, let's go with it. Maybe we hit some more shots and we make it not quite as stressful against Temple the second time around, that sort of thing. So we'll see. I think the outlook is pretty good after last night.
Yeah, and I think, it, you know, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned Sear in the starting lineup. I think he gives you some flexibility because when he's not on the floor, Brandon Johnson is your tallest player. So when you have Sear in the lineup, it allows you to do some different things with Brandon, especially offensively, where you can have him out on the perimeter where he's so effective. He's been so effective shooting the three this entire season, but it still gives you a presence down low with some size. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
it does give you some more flexibility. And I agree, Darren, like when he's, you know, the short bursts he's been on the floor this year, he's been impressive. And, you know, he shows some ability to rebound the ball and really good athleticism, I think, for his size. So I think the future is bright for him. I do love to see him getting more minutes like we saw last night.
Yeah. And again, I don't know if it is firmly in the plans for, you know, and in an ideal circumstance, the coaching staff can say, okay, we've got BJ at the three, Ezra at the four, Sear at the five. But I'm like you, I kind of like the flexibility that that gives us because Ezra, and these are in two totally different ways, Ezra and BJ stretch the floor, right? And with Ezra, it's he sort of does the back to the basket from the corner where he can get shifty and use his lateral quickness that a lot of the bigs who are assigned to him, frankly, they don't have. And it's how Ezra is able to draw so many fouls, right? You know, sometimes he gets a little ahead of himself and it leads to turnovers too, but that's the good and the bad that you get with Ezra. And with BJ, it's his three-point shot, obviously, that stretches the floor with him. So if you imagine a scenario where, you know, you've got Sear block to block, posting up offensively, occasionally going to get involved in that way. You've got Ezra to one side, stretching it to the corner, doing the baseline driving and you know, pump faking and things like that, like he normally does, backing down a bigger but typically slower guy. And then you got BJ who can kind of inside out it out on the other wing. It spaces things out in a way that you can envision this team coming together offensively, I think. And then, you know, not to mention you get RJ coming off of those curls into the lane where he gets to the top of the key and does what he does best from the mid range. And Bobby is obviously way more effective when he's aggressive and can penetrate and play make from there. And, you know, we've seen penetration in the back pass to Cam a lot in conference play be effective to get 3-point baskets too. So like it opens them up for a lot of potential, I think. And like you're spot on with it, Matt.
Yeah. And Darren, I'll tell you, it's interesting. You just mentioned that about Bobby, because Bubba and I, again, we were talking about that earlier today. And I think you make a really good point. He is at his best when he's getting into the paint, when he's attacking downhill. And, you know, what that allows for is penetrate and kick out to your shooters on the perimeter. And it did seem like earlier in the season when he was really in a good rhythm, he was getting into the paint a lot, being very aggressive. And then we had the ability to kick it out to our shooters. And I felt recently we haven't been doing quite as much of that. So I think that's something to look out for. I just wanted to comment. That is a great point. And, it, you know, it's something to look out for with him, you know, when he's on the floor here.
Yeah. And I'll say his best assist games have come. They've been born of that. Basically, right? He's able to get to the free throw line or deeper and then find a teammate, whether it's somebody slashing to the hoop, somebody, you know, backdoor on the baseline, or he's giving it back out for a high quality look from three, right? It's, you know, when he's got 6-7 assists in a game, I think typically that's what we see is he's aggressive with the dribble drive and can make some keen decisions out of that.
Darren, just a couple minutes ago, you referenced on the rebounding numbers from last night. And let's take a quick look at those team stats. And one of the things that immediately jumped off the page that was a reflection of those rebound numbers, East Carolina, 68 shot attempts compared to just 44 for the Shockers. In addition to the rebounding numbers, 17 offensive rebounds for the Pirates, 7 for Wichita State, And then those turnovers that you referenced for the first 10 minutes of the game, it was 1 a minute for the Shockers. And Pirates did much better after halftime. I think just 3 turnovers or so.
Yeah.
After the break. And 9 for ECU for the game, 19 for Wichita State. So those obviously resulted in those 24 more shot attempts that allowed the Pirates to win despite shooting just 33.8%.
Yeah, and you look at the free throw numbers too, right? This is an ECU team that, led by Ezra Asar, gets to the free throw line a lot. And by a lot, I mean, I think going into last night, they were like top 75 or so in the country in that regard in terms of free throw attempts. So even with half the free throw attempts as Wichita State, again, there are some numbers that you look at and you think, okay, they probably won by a lot, but then those are evened out by the other numbers.
Right.
You mentioned the plus 24 shot differential. I don't know that I'll ever call another game in my life that has a 24 shot differential between the two teams. And it's still just a 2-point game. Like that's just it is a bizarre number. You never say never, but I would have a hard time believing I ever call a game like that again. But I will say Wichita State coming into last night was 65th in the country in tempo. And not that we haven't played up-tempo teams to this point, but for whatever reason, last night was the opportunity in which the Pirates really used that to their advantage. I think a lot of the times it can sort of scare a fan base. It's like, okay, this up-tempo team is coming to town, or we're visiting this up-tempo team, which means a lot of the time people misinterpret the data and they're like, okay, this is a good, quick, efficient basketball team. I think for ECU, with the way that the Pirates play defensively, it sort of created an opportunity where, okay, this team likes to play fast. Let's embrace that. Let's force them into it. And you saw the erratic nature of the point guard play for Wichita State last night as a result of the pressure, right? So it's like almost as if, okay, you know they're going to try to play fast, pressure them in a way that anticipates that and forces some bad passes. And I think that was a strategic implementation by the coaching staff going into last night to create some of those turnovers, which obviously worked really, really well throughout the game, even though, the Pirates did that thing we've seen them do a couple of times where the opposition sputters and can't seem to score points, and the Pirates are really having a hard time creating separation with it because they're just not hitting shots. It worked to their advantage, is my point. And that, to me, is encouraging because if you look ahead on the schedule, there are some up-tempo teams coming up that are going to have to be toppled for the Pirates to redeem this season. Maybe that's not the right word. That might be a little dramatic, but in order for them to improve on the season and build on what they've done so far, you're going to have to beat some teams that like to move quickly.
Yeah, to your point, yeah. If you get partial numbers of that box score, and if you'd have ever told me, without me knowing the number of shot attempts that we shoot 33-34% and go 3 out of 8 from the free throw line and that we won at Wichita State, you wouldn't believe it. But then if you find out the number of shot attempts and then the number of turnovers and everything that plays into it, you're like, well, okay, I can see how it happened. Taking a look at the
– Boy, oh, boy, not to interrupt, Bubba, but I mean, 3 out of 8 for the – that's like a rec league number. I mean, how often are you going to see a game at this level with only 8 free throw attempts and 3 makes? That's a crazy stat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
And again, especially the way that the Pirates take free throws. And honestly, maybe not as much in conference play because guys like Brandon Johnson have, their percentages have gone down from the line in conference play. But, for the most part, you shoot okay, right? But a lot of the times the numbers are a little bit deceiving. It's like twice as good the percentage, but 3 times as many the shots from the free throw line, right? So it's still not quite where you want it to be. But you know, the Pirates aren't a horrible free throw shooting team. It just kind of seems like it because of situational stuff. So yeah, no, the 3-for-8 is a that's almost as jarring as the plus 24 shot differential.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
And in the type of game that last night's game was, no, there's no tremendous offensive numbers or statistics to write home about. But then very quickly running over those individual numbers from last night, you had 3 Pirates in double figures led by Brandon Johnson. 6 of those 12 points came during a sequence there that I wanted to reference fairly early on in the second half. I think East Carolina had been outscored by the Shockers 9-2 in the first 5 minutes of the second half, trailed by 3. But then you had Ezra Saar knock down a corner 3, and then Brandon Johnson knocked down a couple of 3s, and R.J. Felton also had a bucket. So in about a minute and a half, 2-minute stretch, ECU outscored Wichita State 11-2 to go from down 3 to up 6.
Yeah, it was it was interesting. That was that first called timeout that they turn into the media timeout in the second half. And coming out of that, if I'm not mistaken, it was Ezra's 3 that fell first. And, I mean, how about that? Correct. His 5th make from deep on the season. And that one might have been the most dynamic, right? Early on, it's kind of like top of the circle. All right, they're giving me space. Sure, I got plenty of time. I'll take it. Ezra, like, he put a little more sauce on that one, right? It's the through the legs dribble, the step back, the pump fake, and they're still not biting. So he's like, okay, all right, sure, I'll go with it. I don't know that we can expect that kind of inside out production from Ezra other than in some one-off spots, right? We're 20 games in. That's his 5th make from 3 overall. So it's not like that's to be expected from here on out as a piece of what he can do. But, you know, he's been okay on those long 2s from that type of spacing as well. And I think teams are starting to catch on to his MO when he gets it down into the corner. And he does that, the back the guys down and try to spin and get lateral and draw contact that way. I think what sometimes teams are doing to counteract that is when he goes back to the basket and kind of gets his head down and goes bull in the china shop sometimes, they're being coached, according to the scouting report, to sort of back off of him when he does that. And it's creating some situations where, you know, he's traveled a time or two in an instance like that. He's had this space that he's wasn't quite expecting and isn't 100% sure right off the bat what to do with it. So they're adjusting well. The next step for him, I think, is more fluidly adjusting to their adjustment, right? And whether that means, you know, going up with it before he's so deep into the basket that he can't really react on the fly, or, you know, starting to take and make some of those jumpers from 2-point range. That's I think sort of the next thing for him. But that, I mean, that was such an important stretch, and it just goes to show that you know, shot making fixes everything. And it was really great to see. You see the 3-for-5 for BJ on the screen there. Like, that is a legitimately good shooting night for him on a night where his team was not shooting especially well. And he just kind of, man, he just brings it all together defensively. The 3 steals, he probably should have gotten credited for 1 or 2 more because he was the initial hand on a lot of those passes. You'd have to watch it back to be sure, but it kind of felt like he was even more impactful defensively than that. It's a big stretch from 2 guys who were obviously huge, huge for this team.
Shedding a little more light on Ezra Saar and his perimeter shooting, what you said is definitely factual in that he only has 5 makes, but you know, for full disclosure, he only has 9 attempts.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing. Like, to your point, I would like to see him, not be so hesitant to shoot that shot. No, you don't want to see him shooting a high volume, but, don't hesitate if they're going to sag off you because he's so potent and with his ability to drive downhill and get to the basket, you know, if they're going to sag off you, you know, whether it's a 15-footer, 17-footer, you know, take that shot.
Yeah, and you know, the shoulder injury last year was mainly the reason that the three-point shooting was not part of his game, or and he's said that, right? So he knows it's something that he can do. It's an interesting question, Bubba. Like, I don't know if they drew up 2 3-point attempts per game for him, like what would his percentage be? I honestly don't know. Like, I think he's got a pretty true stroke. And he's doing well with it in game with what he's given. If you tried to bring that out of him a little bit more, I don't know. I mean, assumedly he wouldn't shoot equivalent to 5 for 9, right? But does he shoot 40% and become a really good stretch four guy in that regard too? And then he's got the lateral quickness in addition to a 3-point shot. Who knows, right? At that point, man, like, that's about as dynamic a player as you can ask for in this conference. So I don't know the answer to that. I would imagine there's a reason he's not shooting 2 a game, and it's probably because the percentage would not be, you know, 4 of 9 equivalent or around there. But it's nice to have when he does give that.
Right.
You know, I'll tell you guys, as I'm looking at these statistics on the screen, the one that continues to jump out at me is Cam Hayes. And, you know, obviously a rough night last night shooting. You know, he's had obviously a very difficult, you know, start to his season coming in midway. But I think in order for this team to be competitive against the top half of the league, he's going to have to find a way to get going offensively. And, you know, he's shown it in some spurts here recently, but we're going to need him to play extremely well to have a chance. You know, obviously last night we were able to rely on the defense against Wichita, but if we're going to be competitive, I think against the Memphises of the world, you know, the top tier teams, we're going to have to find a way to get him going. What do you guys think it is? I mean, is it obviously coming into the season late? I know he's trying to find his way in the offense, but I think right now, to me, it's kind of a confidence thing. He just doesn't look confident shooting the ball.
Yeah, he's a good shooter. I don't know that he's you know, he's shooting 34.5% from 3 in conference play and is among the team's best shooters now that we're into American play. I think there's a little bit of like what we talked about earlier with the spacing, with Bobby being able to control it up top and work from there, with Ezra and Brandon sort of flanking the offense, and in the ideal scenario, you've got somebody working block to block too. Then you got to worry about the other guard, right? And it's kind of what it has seemingly been at times when Jaden Walker has played the 2, right? This is the freelance position. When you establish what we established with those 4 earlier, you do get a 5th guy on the floor, and you can base what their action is according to their strengths and according to what they do well in certain situations against certain defenses, right? Because it's been the same with Jaden too, whereas when he's off the ball, you're not sure he's as comfortable. So I don't know if Cam is, I honestly wouldn't know this. I'd be interested to ask him next time I see him. I wonder if he is more comfortable on the ball and if that sort of is playing a part in his sort of like floating around, not 100% sure where his spots are going to be within an offense. And not to oversimplify it, right? Because they have specific schemes drawn up. It's not like he has no assignment in the offense. He usually has a very distinct thing that he is tasked with doing at a given time. But it's interesting when you got a team that struggles to score the way that we do sometimes. You've got certain guys who have to get theirs, right? RJ Felton has to get his shot attempts. Brandon Johnson has to get his attempts. Ezra Asar has to get his attempts. And when you're in a game where I know we put up 68 shots last night, but you know, you're in a game where you only score in the 50s, it's kind of hard to wedge in, okay, let's make sure Cam gets his opportunities. And he took 8 shots from the field. That was among the highest on the team, right? And they just weren't falling. So, you know, maybe we're talking about this a little bit differently if one more of those three-pointers falls and he goes 2 of 3 from deep. It's been a getting comfortable element for him. And some games it's there, some games it's not. But honestly, Matt, you can kind of say that about everybody, right? It's just, you know, RJ's had his nights where he's just kind of out of it and not necessarily in a rhythm. And arguably 5 of 15 from the field is out of rhythm for him. You know, nights that Brandon has trouble getting involved or, you know, they've got Ezra figured out for one thing and he's got to adapt and you just kind of struggling to make it happen. I just think it's a fluidity thing. And if the team starts making more shots and the fluidity improves and everything kind of flows better, it's just going to come natural to him. And we've seen that in certain games.
Kind of shifting to what lies ahead for the Pirates. You have, of course, Temple coming to town on Sunday afternoon, 5 o'clock tip off on ESPN2. The Pirates were winners up in Philadelphia, 73-62 back on Wednesday, January the 10th. And, you know, the Owls really struggling near the bottom of the league standings, 8-12 overall. And then following that one, you have South Florida, who's been one of the surprises in the league. Obviously, regime change there with the staff from Kennesaw State coming over after Kennesaw State was so good a season ago. The Bulls, 12-5, right there near the top of the league standings. And that one is on Wednesday the 31st. So, Darren, what are your thoughts on what lies ahead for ECU?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to beat a team twice, right? We know that. It's a little bit cliche, but it helps that the first one happened on the road with Temple in mind. They were a team that, you know, presented certain problems, but the Pirates did really well defensively against them too. And holding a team like that to 7 of 27 from three was a pretty big feat for them. Certain players, and the Pirates have done this all year, man. Like there's a player that they key in on heading into a game, and that player underperforms what they normally do. Like that's just, the Pirates have been really, really good at that. And for Temple, it was Hysier Miller, who in 31 minutes was held to one of 8 shooting. He didn't hit a 3 in the game in Philadelphia, only 6 points for him in that game. And that's the difference, right? Everybody else is going to do what they're going to do. If the big guy offensively, not big as in physically big, but the big scorer offensively for the opposition isn't able to do what they typically do, then, you know, as long as the Pirates are scoring enough and, you know, 54 might not be enough, then they're going to do okay. Now, again, you're going to have to imagine Hysier Miller is going to play better in this one. You know, it's a winnable game, obviously, and it would be the first time the Pirates have ever won a home and away sweep against Temple if they were to get the win. And then South Florida, man, I haven't looked as far ahead to really have a firm grasp on what they're doing, but I just know that team's good. That's going to be a test of a different kind. You know, what's the major league line? You know, you string together one win and then another, and then you get a third. And that, my friends, is a winning streak. And it just feels like this Pirates team could really use the rattling off of a few. And who's to say, you know, you get the win against Temple, you're feeling good about a season sweep over them. That's some really positive momentum to carry into, oh yeah, a home game against South Florida I mean, very winnable at that point. And you know, like I say winnable as if that's not a given. Like in this league, anybody can beat anybody on any given night. And that's just the way that it is. It's you know, every game's been close, it feels like. And Bubba, you and I were talking about this number prior to us going live. Last night, the Pirates won a game that was within 5 points one way or the other. It was within 5 points with 5 minutes or less to play. The Pirates now are 4-7 in games that are separated by no more than 5 points with 5 minutes to play. That's a type of game that they're growing into being able to win. And they ended it on what, like a 3 minute scoring drought, which feels like it's something that is happening a lot down the stretch. But the good news is the Pirates are locking down the stretch in a lot of these games too. So it's happening for the other team as well. But like they needed that. They need that number to improve. First, it's wild that they've played 20 games and 11 of them have been that close in the late goings. But the more of those that they can pull out, like the better this team is going to fare in the rest of the conference schedule. That's just like, you know, there have been 11 so far. There are going to be more. That's yep. What it amounts to. And they're going to have to start winning more.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point. And, you know, with the type of defense we play, it's so gritty. They're going to keep you in games most nights. So to your point, Darren, you're going to see, in my opinion, you're going to see at least 5 or 6 more of those games, probably minimum, that come down into the final few minutes. And you're, you know, probably in a 2 or 3 point game.
Yeah. And that's when you hope that, you know, it's happened some that the play that you design where, you know, you try and get somebody a shot off of a screen or, you know, we all love RJ for his ability to isolate from the elbow. It's kind of his bread and butter. That's where you hope that if it comes down to those possessions, you get some of those shots. And, you know, like we saw against North Texas, sometimes you get that shot and you still don't win. It's just the way it happens. So it's been fascinating, man. Just like as a first timer in this league and with this team, obviously, the competition on a night in and night out basis has been unreal. And there's a lot of teams that, you know, there are your Memphises who can put up 112 points in a one-off. But more often than not, it's the defensive minded teams. And we get something closer to what we had last night, what we had against North Texas. It's certainly interesting, right? It's not always great basketball in those games, but, it's competitive and it's exciting. And that from my vantage point is really fun as long as the Pirates win more often than not.
Taking a look at the, American Athletic Conference standings, you have, a surprise there atop the standings. So the Charlotte 49ers 6-1 after their most recent win over UAB, 12-7 overall. First year coach there. Then you have 22nd ranked FAU, 6-1 as well. And their lone loss came to Charlotte. FAU 16-4. Then you got South Florida 5-1, SMU and North Texas 4-1. And I say SMU North Texas are 4-1. They were playing each other tonight. Darren, how did that one play out?
Yeah, you know what? I have not seen a score on that one. For purposes of live streaming here, I'll pull it up though.
I was trying to do the same, but you have 19th ranked Memphis 4-2. They lost recently down at Tulane. Green Wave had been a little bit of a disappointment for sure, but they showed you what they're capable of with that win over Penny Hardaway and his Tigers. UAB's also 4-2, Tulane and East Carolina 3-4, UTSA, which, you know, took Memphis to the brink, what, lost in overtime at the FedEx Forum. They're 2-5, Tulsa 1-5, as is Rice. Temple 1-6, and Wichita State is, of course, 0-6.
I've got an update for you. North Texas beat SMU 68-66. The Mean Green have now tied a program record for consecutive home victories with 17. That's impressive. That's impressive. And I mean, another close game, right? Another 2-point game, go figure.
Yep. So there you go. As you take a look at this league, we talk about how competitive it is. Obviously, right at this juncture, you look at Memphis and FAU in the top 25. You know, when the smoke clears, you know, here in a month plus, do you think this is going to be a two-bid league, or maybe do you think there's a chance you could get three?
Yeah, I think there's a legitimate chance for three. I've seen some talk about, and maybe Penny was the one who said this in their postgame the other night. You know, he's like, man, we're getting awfully close to the bubble, which, again, as a ranked team, it's kind of hard to believe that. But, you know, you drop too many in conference play, and, yeah, then you're talking about that for sure. But, man, I mean, this, again, North Texas just pulled off that kind of win like that. South Florida's having a great season. Charlotte, like any of these teams could – and, you know, you look at the streak column there as well. It's like there are some hot teams toward the top of the conference. You know, Charlotte lost their first conference game, and they hold off six in a row to get where they are. Like – who knows? Like maybe they'll slow down, maybe not. I find it hard to believe that the glut of teams there is going to include only teams that slow down. Like it's very easy for me to imagine that FAU and Memphis have a team joining them in the NCAA tournament. It's just kind of hard to say at this point who it's going to be, right? It could be the 49ers, could be the Bulls, North Texas. Like UAB is not a bad club either. Like that's a team that could, you know, they're losers of one straight according to what we're seeing there, but you know, they're fully capable of hauling off a big winning streak toward the end of the conference slate and turning themselves into a team that is worthy of that third American bid. Like it's got great potential as a league and yeah, no, I think it's very possible this turns into a three-bid league this year.
And the tournament's going to be crazy. And you could literally have anybody about come up and win the thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, no kidding, right? Like I just mentioned seven, eight teams that, you know, could be a tournament team. And if you're putting yourself in a position where you could be an NCAA tournament team, then, yeah, for sure, you could be the type of team to win a conference tournament. That's it's going to be really, really fun and really interesting to see how this plays out for the rest of the year. And I'm going to preface the fun part with assuming the Pirates get into that winning record territory and are maybe fighting for that third spot in the league in terms of, you know, who's the next best team behind FAU and Memphis.
Matt, what stands out to you, as you take a look at these standings and then just the competitiveness throughout the American?
You know, just balance. I mean, I think there's a lot of good basketball in this league. You know, I do agree that, you know, eventually Charlotte will begin to, you know, fall to the bottom a little bit. And I think you'll see Memphis make a very strong push, but you know, my focus has really just been on ECU and just trying to find a way to win some more of these games. And, you know, when you really look at it, we could easily have two more wins in conference. But another good opportunity, you know, coming up against Temple, and, you know, we'll see how it goes. But that's what I see, a lot of balance. And really on any given night, you feel like, you know, your team has a chance to win. So that makes it interesting.
Yeah, and I'll just follow that up with, you know, I think on the surface, those not necessarily paying close attention to the Pirates might look at those standings and see, okay, they've got three conference wins. All three of those teams are below them in the standings. But you got to keep in mind, like, it was a collapse against UAB. Otherwise, Pirates were right there. Pirates. It took that miracle heave down the floor for North Texas to beat ECU. We had FAU with their backs against the ropes, and they just reacted in the way that a ranked basketball team does, and they tightened the clamps in the final minutes and pulled out a win. So again, on the surface, it would be easy to point at the three wins and say, yeah, but they're over these guys. You got to look at the close losses too, which could have gone either way, right? The margin for error is so thin in these games that are decided by a singular score. You could also easily point at those and be like, yeah, but the Pirates should have or could have, might have beaten this team and that team and this team. So it's, you know, anybody can play with anybody, bottom to top in this league. That's just, they're all going to be competitive.
Exactly. It's not like that Florida Atlantic game where we lost by 15. It's not like it was a 20 or 25 point game and the Pirates tightened it up at the end. It was the exact opposite, where you were down one possession with 4 minutes to play.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And that's one of those that, based on the final score, Bubba, you would not think it's included in that, you know, 4-7 in games that are within 5 points with 5 minutes to go. But that's one of them. And some of the other two for the Pirates, by the way, are Florida in Lakeland, basically an away game for the Pirates, and against South Carolina at home. Like those are both in that category as well. The Pirates played two really good SEC teams close, and you know, you don't get the win, that gets forgotten pretty quickly and pretty easily. I get that. That's the nature of the season, but that's all part of the journey for these Pirates at this point.
As we begin to wrap up this edition of Pirate Basketball Overtime, I want to shift over and talk some college baseball, because we know you certainly cover that, and you work for USA Baseball, also do work for D1 Baseball. But before we do, I wanted to recognize our sponsor, Ed Watkins Marine, edwatkinsmarine.com. Appreciate their support of the program. Ed Watkins Marine has two locations to serve you, located in Denver and Cornelius, North Carolina, in the greater Charlotte area of our state. They have fishing boats, pleasure boats, pontoon boats, center consoles, family-friendly bow riders, trailers, engines, UTVs. They have all the brands you're seeking: C-Pro, Suncatcher, Pontoons and Tritoons, Stingray, Yamaha, Suzuki, Mercury, Vexus Bass Boats, Explore Skiffs, and more. Whether you're looking for a new boat or to repower your existing boat, Ed Watkins Marine can help you meet your boating needs. Visit them online at edwatkinsmarine.com. We appreciate Big Ed supported the show. Now shifting over to talk a little college baseball. I know you do the ACC, excuse me, baseball, etc. Also here in about a month from now, you're going to be down in Jacksonville covering the College Baseball Classic with Kyle Peterson. Tell us about that event.
Yeah, so this is something that the partnership with D1 Baseball sort of created. They got into the streaming game last year with the Carbach Round Rock Classic, and that is a early season event that's put on by a group called Peak Events, and Peak has expanded their events into, they've got, I think, 5 this year. So the way they like to do it is they find a place to be the host, obviously. They get 4 teams, typically pretty good college baseball teams, to get together and play sort of a regional style in a few days of action. So this is the inaugural Jacksonville College Baseball Classic. They're going to play it at 121 Financial Ballpark, which is the home of the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. Can't wait for that to come out of my mouth so many times that weekend. Home of the Jumbo Shrimp. It's just fun to say. But that event is going to be Auburn, Iowa, Virginia, and Wichita State. And it's 6 games in 3 days, streamed exclusively on D1Baseball.com, in addition to their other, you know, 4 events aside from that. It just kind of made sense, right? It's like, hey, Darren's on the D1 Baseball team now. He does play-by-play. Let's have him do one of these. And I know I'm thrilled to be working with Kyle Peterson, right? I mean, it's not not often, not every day you get to work with the number one college baseball analyst in ESPN's roster. So that'll be a lot of fun. KP's great. He's been awesome in the lead up to this. And I know the production value of the event is going to be just off the charts. It should be some really good baseball, some really good broadcasts. It'll be a fun start to the season for me. I've got one midweek on ACC Network Extra. The week prior to that, I think I've got Liberty at Duke that week. And then otherwise that's going to be my first baseball of the year. So it'll be awesome.
I believe your most recent drop on ACC baseball, et cetera, you know, was Chris Pollard of Duke, but you've also caught up with Scott Forbes of North Carolina, as well as several others. So what are some of your, I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but some of your major takeaways from those conversations?
Yeah. And I appreciate that. What we're doing is having a conversation with all 14 ACC baseball coaches in the preseason. So it amounts to two or three of those dropping per week until opening day. Pollard, the head coach at Duke, dropped today. We released Tom Walter of the number one Wake Forest Demon Deacons on Tuesday. Some key takeaways, honestly. The league is going to be about as deep as I've ever seen it. And it feels like we say that every year about the ACC. It's cool for Pirate fans' perspective because, you know, these are a lot of teams that they play regularly in non-conference play. Really excited about it. It's actually, I'm a little bummed. The weekend I'm in Jacksonville is the same weekend of the three-game set between the Pirates and the Tar Heels. So I'm not going to be able to catch any of those. Like I otherwise probably would have, but man, it's just a continuation of the same old conversation, Bubba, right? It's there's so much great college baseball in this state, and ECU is certainly toward the top of that list. The Big Four and the ACC are all ranked, you know, keeping it close in the Carolinas. I mean, Clemson was the number four national seed last year, is going to be really good again. You guys know UNC Wilmington is typically a pretty good program. Baseball teams like Campbell and, you know, there's just so much of it. There's a lot of really, really, really good baseball in the area. So like the ACC is no different. It's going to be, outside of the SEC, the class of college baseball, but you know, us ACC people will brag about it. If Wake Forest is number one for however long they're number one, we're going to take that and run with it. And it's going to be a fun year, man. There's so much good baseball in this area.
Yep. No doubt. And, you know, it just shows you, you know, you look at LSU, the way they go about it, getting it done, Wake Forest, and, you know, to their fan base credit, and you know, they had an excellent atmosphere in the Super Regional last year. But just the different ways to accomplish the same goal, you know, because you think about the atmospheres that exist in the SEC with the likes of LSU, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Arkansas, South Carolina, et cetera.
Yeah, and I mean, look, like, you know, I do some games. I've got a series or two on my schedule at Clark LeClaire. Like, that's one of my favorite environments, right? And it's vastly different than – a lot of the SEC schools you go to. I did a series at Clemson for the first time last year and was really impressed with that environment. Even during spring break, they still had a ton of people show out for those games. It was a lot of fun. I would say it was SEC like. It's great. And to see it, you hit on something too, the different ways that teams do it. If you look at, especially, you know, here in the way things are done in 2024, Wake Forest got a big time arm, former Tennessee Volunteer Chase Burns. You know, he's going to be their ace, presumably. And, you know, they became a premier transfer destination this year with this season that they had last year. You look at a team like Duke, who has built itself up into having regular success. They don't necessarily do it that way because they're Duke. You know, a lot of their key contributors are like Ivy League grad transfers. It's way different, you know, or they'll pluck somebody from a Division III school and have a lot of success with that. You know, ECU is a different type of animal in terms of the way they recruit. We know Cliff likes his local to local-ish guys. He recruits the state of North Carolina hard, and it works to his advantage in a lot of cases. And, you know, there's something of a pirate way when it comes to baseball, right? Like it makes sense when you see a guy end up at ECU and it's like, yeah, okay. Yep. That makes sense that he's the type of guy Cliff wants and can excel with that program. That's the fun part about it, is just to see the many ways that it can be done. And, you know, who's to say Duke isn't a better team in ACC play than Wake Forest this year, even with, you know, they're not sort of the it team in college baseball in the way that Wake Forest has become in really quick order. Right. But they're a really good team. They might have the best bullpen in the country, Duke. So it's cool, man. It's so much fun to cover, you know, the ACC specifically, but also college baseball in the area. Cause like I said, it's so good in this state and in the area. It's kind of hard not to be interested in all of it.
Right. And, you know, Wake Forest certainly had some good teams, but you know, like you're saying, the Blue Devils have been knocking on the door of Omaha for several years now, having been to, I think, at least three Super Regionals under Coach Pollard. And I think game three of Super Regionals on a couple of occasions. Mm-hmm. And Wake Forest.
Yeah. And that's, you know,
I was,
and
that's, obviously that's, last year.
Yeah, and we haven't even really mentioned, you know, North Carolina, NC State. I know Pirate fans might not like our mentioning of those two as much as the others, but, you know, NC State has been right there in terms of breaking through, and you know, they've been to Omaha, yeah, of course.
A couple of trips of Omaha.
Yeah, and North Carolina is looking to get back to sort of that level, and Scott Forbes thinks that they've got enough talent for them to do that this year. You know, pitching's kind of been the concern for them in recent years, and they're hoping to improve in that way too. So it's so I'm you can tell I love what I'm doing with Pirate basketball right now. It's going to overlap a little bit with baseball, and I'm going to be on cloud nine because I'm so excited for all of it.
Man, I am very jealous of you guys. I'll tell you, the way you just laid that out, Darren. You know, up here in New England, I have the opposite problem. There's no college baseball, you know. I mean, yeah, we have UConn. UConn's pretty good, but mm-hmm. You know, nobody gets jazzed up about it. You know, it's all up here, it's all professional sports. But the amount, to your point, the amount of good baseball in North Carolina is outstanding. And I'm jealous, guys. That's all I can say. I'm a little envious, you know.
Because, well, I'll tell you what, Matt, might I recommend a new favorite team? You could get into Boston College baseball. That seems like a fun one to me. They've got a first year head coach who really amongst the ACC coaches is the only guy that I did not have a pre-existing relationship with before doing our preseason conversation. Todd Interdonato was at Wofford for a long time. He turned them into the class of the SoCon. He's a really interesting, compelling guy. He won me over, and
nice. Okay, that's
my recommendation. Okay. Get into Boston College baseball. It'll be your way to sort of insert yourself into baseball here in the area.
I like it. I would love to see them, you know, have another great year. That's a good tip. I like it. All right, thanks for giving me some hope. You know,
yeah.
All name team. For, what you say, Todd
Interdonato.
Yep. Yeah, there you go.
Like almost like the soccer team Inter Milan. It's Inter Donato. It's Inter Donato. So he didn't correct me. I assume that's how I pronounce it. He didn't say no. It's something else. So that's what we're rolling with.
Another program up there that I've shared this with Matt. You know, and they've had some success in recent years. They have some tremendous facilities. One of their professional players had given back in a large way, and that is Binghamton. They have a really nice ballpark. I'm trying to remember how many million, I want to say it was like $50 or $60 million worth of facilities. I don't know. It was something that most people would not expect Binghamton to have.
Yeah, almost like you know, Todd Frazier gave all that money to Rutgers, and I think I think their ballpark is named for him. I think it's Todd Frazier Ballpark at Rutgers, which is a pretty cool connection, right? The Toms River, New Jersey guy giving back to the community and feeding into that program is, you know, Frazier is all about the game at basically every level. So, of course, he's doing that and feeding it back into his community. That's a cool program with you know, some buzziness and some nice facilities where you might not otherwise expect it to.
Well, Darren, we really appreciate you being so generous with your time tonight, spending a little over an hour with us talking Pirate hoops as well as a little college baseball. We'll certainly have you back on the show over the next few weeks as the Pirates progress toward the conference tournament in hoops. But, tell folks how they can follow you on social media before we get out of here.
Yeah. If you see my name down here, I was trying to point at it, Darren Vaught, pretty unique. So as you can imagine, I'm just at Darren Vaught on everything. Pretty easy to find, pretty accessible, or I try to be anyway. So by all means, reach out, say hey. If you're at Menjie's, come say hey, come down and hang out with me and Coach Perry for a few minutes before tip. If you want, that's encouraged also. Would love to say hey.
Yeah, Darren, thanks so much for coming on, man. You're doing a great job. Wait, what's the comment here? What do we have?
Yeah, Justin, clarify. I didn't see that comment in a timely fashion.
I think this came when I recommended BC.
I see. Okay.
I thought that was probably the case.
Well, hey, you know what? It's always ECU first, Justin. It's always ECU first. But, you know, I'll have to incorporate some BC, you know. Not a bad tip. Not a bad tip.
And he says, yes, LOL.
Got it. Okay, yep.
I'm very a little jet lagged tonight, Justin. I'm not, I'm not as sharp as I normally am on the humor.
Yeah, Matt has an affinity for the Eagles from the 2021 Military Bowl.
Yeah. Okay. Very nice.
I just kidding. From when they opted out and East Carolina could not play Boston College in the Military Bowl because of.
Yep. All right. I'm gonna play the jet lag card too there because I just didn't pick up on that. But that's good. That's good.
That was directed at Matt.
They tried to use a global pandemic as an excuse to opt out of a football game. And, you know, that just didn't fly with me, fellas, you know,
sure.
You know, just no excuses. We need to play football. So, that took me a long time to get over that one, Bubba, as you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of Pirates were in that same boat with you. But, guys, excellent show. We'll appreciate everyone tuning in. Appreciate all the support of the program. That will do it for this edition of Pirate Basketball Overtime. East Carolina victorious on Wednesday night against Wichita State Shockers, 54-52. They will return to action on Sunday afternoon against the Temple Owls at 5:00 on ESPN2 at Williams Arena Menjie's Coliseum. With that win over the Shockers, the Pirates snapped a 3-game skid, 10-10 overall, 3-4 in the American. But for co-host Matt Semenza, as well as the play-by-play voice of East Carolina basketball, Darren Vaught, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum. You've been watching and listening to Pirate Basketball Overtime. We'll talk to you soon. And as always, go Pirates.
What purple?